Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
Erin Hoffman Austin is a national board-certified French teacher in Colorado. She began her teaching career in Minnesota in 2002, and she holds a BA in French and art education and an MA in curriculum and instruction. She's also done graduate studies in French studies for gifted, creative, and talented education. She was an NEA Foundation Global Learning Fellow in 2018 and now presents nationally on global education-related topics. In addition to doing contract writing and curriculum consulting work, Ms. Austin is the author of The Ultimate Guide to Selling Original World Language Resources, How to Open, Fill, and Grow a Successful Online Curriculum Store, which was published by Routledge in 2021. The book is based on her experience with her own Teachers Pay Teachers curriculum store, and she leads workshops to show other educators how to make money from their original resources. In addition to the Out of the Trenches podcast, she's been a featured guest on Leading Equity, Side Hustle School, The Dr. Will Show, and Punk Rock Classroom Podcast. Ms. Austin is currently the chair of the Associate Board of Big Brothers Big Sisters of Colorado, an organization she has been involved in since 2005, and she sits on the board of the Abundant Yoga Community, a nonprofit in Western Wisconsin, whose mission is to bring yoga to those with financial or geographic barriers. Welcome to the podcast, Erin.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, we connected earlier in the year because you're writing a little bit for the statewide organization for world language teachers in Colorado. And I'm so happy to have you on today. And I listened to your episode on leading equity. And, you know, there are a lot of things that I'd like to talk about that you're currently involved with. But let's start out with the story. What I ask everybody at the beginning of the podcast, tell me about a time that you were in the trenches of education.
Well, I want to couch this by saying that I've heard a lot of stories of teachers being in the trenches. And although mine is trenches for me, in the grand scheme of things, I had it easy. So I started teaching in Minnesota in 2002. I was teaching in suburban Minneapolis in a district that I was super happy to land in. Seemed like everything was going in the right direction until it wasn't. And then there were a lot of years where the community and governor at the time were not funding education. So we were getting hit from the state level and we were getting hit from the local level. And I noticed around me, teacher friends losing their jobs. And it was a result of no money. So that equaled bigger class sizes. So that equaled fewer teachers were needed. And the way it worked in Minnesota is that in a district, there is seniority district wide. Mm-hmm. And I started to see everyone under me losing their jobs as a result of no money and higher class sizes. And I think it might have been my last year there. I had a class of French 3 with 43 students in it.
Wow.
Yeah. And it couldn't even fit in my classroom. They had to move that class to a different room. And every single year, the things that we had to do got more and more and more for not more money and much harder jobs. And every year it was a fight to keep your job because the district would basically put out a projection and the union would come back. And I mean, it was back and forth. So I was constantly worried about losing my job until I was then on the bottom. And what was really hard was that I was on the bottom, even though there was one person who had seniority over me, despite the fact that I was hired first. Because in Minnesota, when two people have the same start date, the seniority goes to whoever has, it's like either the higher or the lower file folder number with the Minnesota Department of Education. So even though I was hired first, I had a lower seniority and ultimately lost my job because of funding. And that was hard. I had been for many years in grad school doing three different grad programs, and then I bought a house on my own and all of a sudden didn't have a job and had had health issues kind of come up in those last 2 to 3 years in the district. I found a job, a full-time French job, about an hour outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so that next year, I was commuting an hour from St. Paul to a smaller district. And then that was like my biggest trench, like losing my job, having to find another full-time French job, not super easy to come by. And then I got a job in Colorado, which interestingly, once I came here, I could kind of breathe a little bit and went to the doctor to try to deal with some of the health complications that had come up. And after seeing a specialist and going to get all sorts of tests, turns out the doctor said, this is entirely stress. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of teachers who have felt that, particularly over the past couple years, when there are things that just get worse and worse and worse, and we take it in our bodies.
Yeah. And that makes me think of an episode I did with Jessica Johnson, where she was a principal who was just working herself to the bone, right? And she was having, you know, like heart attack like symptoms, and did several trips to the emergency room, right? And it turned out to be stress because she was not balancing. And you know, I get that whole scenario of having that large class size, right? Kind of, and then not having necessarily a guarantee because of the enrollment numbers, like having been a French teacher myself. So when you came to Colorado, how was it kind of in terms of the enrollment numbers and the funding? Were you still seeing that issue when you moved here?
No. The strange thing was that in Minnesota at the time, the enrollment numbers were pretty solid in French. I like to point out to people in Minnesota, you have a really strong population of kids whose dream is to play professional hockey. And so because of that, Canada is the place to be other than Minnesota. So learning French, you know, I had a lot of boys in my classrooms, hockey players. But when I came here, enrollment was relatively steady, although the job I walked into, they said there had been a lot of teacher turnover in French, which was no big deal. Like, I can take that over. And I think I walked into a great position, a great district, a great school. And it's an IB school, and I really loved learning that new challenge. The difficult thing moving here is that I took about a $17,000 pay cut, significantly worse healthcare package, significantly worse benefits package, like with, like, I don't have a 403b match here, and I did in Minnesota. So financially, it's really hard, and the cost of living is higher, but the job is definitely better than I had. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah, and that's a thing, like moving from state to state, and the salary just fluctuates so much. But like you said, it's working in a school where, you know, there is a lot of interest in learning world languages. It is a requirement in the IB program. I've taught in that myself. And then just being able to have that continued enrollment, right? Because they know that, you know, there's something they have to continue with all 4 years of high school and take their test and not from the IB diploma. So let's shift a little bit to your writing. And I mentioned in the bio about your book, The Ultimate Guide to Selling Original World Language Resources. So how long have you been selling resources?
Since I would say, I mean, probably 2012 or 13, somewhere in there, I opened a TPT store. It was like this new thing at the time, this fledgling business. And I opened a store and didn't really do anything with it. until I moved to Colorado. And then I realized, aha, I just took a hefty pay cut. I need to figure out something to help supplement. And at the time I had a side job teaching yoga. And then I also just started creating world language or French resources to sell online, like my own little factory of one. And 2014 is when I really put the pedal to the metal there. And then in 2020, I had grown my store continually and grown it to the point where I was like, wow, like I'm making some decent money here. And I really learned some really good tips and strategies. So in my school district, we have the TALL classes, Teachers as Learning Leaders. Okay. So it's a collaboration between our district union and the state union. And so we can teach classes in the district to colleagues, and they can get college credit for it if they choose, or they can get lane change credit for it. And so I taught a group of teachers how to open, fill, and grow a successful online curriculum store. And teaching that class was kind of my rough draft for the book. And even to this day, I have some teachers who were in that class who will email me or text me and be like, oh my God, I just had my best month yet, which is pretty cool, using the strategies that I taught. And then I took the curriculum that I created for that class and I wrote manuscript proposals that were 15 to 25 pages, sent them to 10 different traditional publishers, and Routledge was interested. And I signed a contract in 2020 and was published in 2021.
So I doubt that when you were developing that course that you actually thought that would become a book.
Well, I wondered. I wondered, because I was like, you know, I have some ideas here, but let's see, like in practicality, do these ideas just work for me? Or can other people use these ideas to make a lot of money? And turns out it's the latter. Mm-hmm. And I was also an art major. And so creative expression is just kind of part of what I love. And over the years, certainly after having kids, it becomes hard to creatively express drawing and painting and that kind of thing, because my kids have their own mess. I don't need mine out too. Yeah. So writing started to really be a creative outlet for me. And when I got the book contract, that was exciting. And ever forward, working on my second manuscript proposal now for my editor.
And you, like, we'll talk about the second book in a minute, but we've been in this experience where you're the only French teacher in the building. I've experienced that as well. So I think having, you know, some resources due to a lot of teachers might have tried teachers, paid teachers, but I think there is that like reputation of not knowing what's good, what's copyrighted, those type of things when you're looking online for materials. So what would you suggest for teachers that are looking and, you know, trying to find the best materials on places like Teacher?
Reading the reviews. Absolutely. Which is the same thing that so many people I know do if they're, you know, buying an appliance or a car or just something on Amazon. Read the reviews, because then you can really see what other teachers think of the product. I also really, when I do workshops for teachers around the country about how to open, fill, and grow a successful online curriculum store, one of the strategies is really front-loading customer service, making sure that your product description is highly detailed so that anyone buying it knows exactly what they're getting before they purchase it, because then it's going to lead to happier customers.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. And people can check out that book to find out more about, you know, selling online. And it's not necessarily just for world language resources. People who teach other subjects can also gain a lot of benefit from reading your book as well.
Yeah, the strategies are applicable to anything. The examples are specific to world language. And I do think, you know, Teachers Pay Teachers is probably the biggest online marketplace for selling curriculum, but there are others too. I really like the format of Teachers Pay Teachers, that you have to upload something free first, so that it's also just a network of sharing. And I like to keep my prices pretty low too, to make it accessible, because that's important to me.
So let's talk about your second book. So you don't have a working title yet, but it's about global education. So talk to me a little bit. You've done some breakout sessions at some conferences with that. So.
Yeah, my working title as of a couple of weeks ago is Learn with the World, Ideas, Strategies, and Resources to Support a Global Ready World Language Classroom. And so what it's about is in 2018, well, I was in the class of 2018 for the NEA Foundation Global Learning Fellowship. And through that experience, I learned a lot about global ed. And prior to that fellowship, I thought, you know, if anyone said global ed, which really I didn't hear any very often, but starting the fellowship when it was first said, I was like, yeah, I'm global ed. I'm a world language teacher. That's what we do automatically. And that's not it at all. And I was pretty humbled really fast when we started learning about it, specifically with Dr. Fernando Reimers from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He's one of the leaders in the field of global ed. And there's one sentence that really stuck with me about global education. And that is, global education isn't learning about the world. It's learning with and from the world. And that second half there, I think that's the piece that largely we miss. And that in undergrad, I was never taught. And to be fair, the internet was still relatively new and there was a lot of dial-up. But now we have things like Zoom and Flipgrid, and it's really easy to communicate and travel.
Yeah, and I think... that's something that I was also taught in undergrad is, you know, you're teaching kids about this country, right? And that's kind of like, sure, we could communicate with kids via email or do virtual visits of different museums. But I think now that we're so much more integrated in this global community, you can have a guest speaker easily come via Zoom to your class, you know, learn from those experts in the field. So looking forward to reading this book. And do you have any idea as to when this might be out?
Well, my editor is really excited about the idea. And so I have to present the full manuscript proposal, which is due to her by the end of May. Okay. And then it has to go through a review process. And if it passes the review process, then I will be turning in the finalized manuscript probably early fall, and looking at likely next spring or early summer publication. Yeah. So the book really is for world language teachers to help them figure out how to create what I call a global connection plan in their classrooms. So it's how to create experiences for all kids, regardless of who they are, giving them global experiences to help them be more global ready. Because we're now living in a time that, let's face it, with work from home, we can be anywhere in the world and or travel the world and work.
Yeah. And I think we need to, you know, look a little bit at some of these experiences for kids that, you know, they're going to be working in fields that in positions that aren't even created yet, right? So having preparing them for, you know, global marketing and business and all those types of things. So and this will be published with Routledge. So you're working
with them. Yes. Fingers crossed this gets through all the steps and becomes a book.
Okay. Great. Talk to me a little bit about the National Board certification process for world language teachers. I had Jamie Fowler White on previously, and she talked about middle level teachers in general, but I'd like to hear about kind of what you had to do to be certified for French.
Absolutely. national board certification wasn't really on my radar until about 2017 when I started the NEA Foundation Fellowship, because I got to Washington, D.C. that October and met all the other fellows and started learning who they were. And I was like, oh my God, how did I slide into this position? And oh my God, do they know that they let me in? I don't want to tell anyone. Because everybody there, national board certified teachers, teachers of the year in their state. There was one man who was in the National Teachers Hall of Fame. And I was with these people who were so positive about education, so excited about education, just wanted to talk education and not the complaining parts, the growth parts. And I thought, oh my God, wow. This is the first time I've been surrounded by this many people of this caliber of teacher. And I thought, all right, before they figure out that I don't fit in, I need to start doing something to fit in. So I started National Board Certification, the process, I think at the end of 2017. And I took a 2-year cycle to finish it. There are 4 different components for world language teachers and kind of like a 5th hidden component. The hidden component is doing the ACTFL speaking and writing proficiency tests. And I will say it is an incredibly grueling process. It is hard work. And only 40% of teachers pass the first time through. And that's not super encouraging. But on the flip side, that experience was, that and the NEA Fellowship were by far, in 20 years of teaching, the top 2 professional development experiences I've ever had. Like, there is no way you can achieve national board certification without growing and without actually knowing what you're doing. Like, you can fudge your way through grad classes a little bit, but you can't do that through board certification. And I like that.
And would you recommend this to teachers, new or veteran teachers of 20 years? Is it something worth taking the time to do? I know not all districts pay a stipend. Some districts pay like $5,000 more, but...
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah.
You said it takes a lot of time, so.
It does. I think you have to know yourself. I got financial help from my district, so that was helpful because the process, I mean, if you pass the first time through, is around $2,000. So it's not cheap. So you have to consider your financial situation, and definitely, you know, you can look for grants out there too to help support National Board, the process. But in order to do it, you have to be somebody that likes a challenge. And you have to be somebody for whom getting better at your job is a goal. You do, like in my district, I get a stipend, a yearly stipend for being board certified. And when I first certified, I got a stipend from the state of Colorado. When the pandemic hit, they nixed that and we're trying to get it back. But if financial is the only motivator, it's going to be rough. Like, you have to go into it knowing like, this is going to make me better and it's going to be tough. And there's a whole network of NBCTs, National Board Certified Teachers out there who want to help me get through this, who want to support me, and we want to all get better together.
So you do kind of have a coach to help you along the way.
You don't have to, but I wouldn't recommend doing it solo. I'm the only board certified world language teacher in my pretty large district, and it would have been helpful if I had had one here I worked with, three math teachers in my school, and they were definitely able to help. But I had to kind of weed through what they told me and figure out how it would apply to world language. And strangely, the woman who really was my inspiration to become a French teacher became a national board certified teacher years after I had her. So she was definitely mid-career when she did board certification. And she is the best teacher I've ever had. And she did not pass the first time through. She missed it by like less than 1%, which was awful. But she took another crack at it and did it. But I think it can be great for teachers who are mid or later career and you're like, I just need something different. I need to be reinvigorated, because it makes you change and pushes growth. But I do think you have to be, I think you have to have taught at least 3 years maybe before you can start board certification.
So if you fail, is this, you have to wait until the next year for the next cycle? How does that work?
Yes. Basically, you register in the fall and you let the you pay your $75 registration fee, which lasts for that school year. And then you say, okay, National Board, I am going to do component one and component three this year. And then you have until, I want to say like May 15th, maybe somewhere in there. And it may have changed since I did it, to submit your components. I did two components per school year. There are people out there who are absolutely certifiably crazy who do them all in 1 year. I would never recommend that to anyone. I think one or two a year is appropriate.
Okay. And so, yeah, definitely a 2 year process for most people.
Yes.
So, but if they don't pass on those, do they just redo one of the components and then?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, you can see your score breakdown, and everything is kind of weighted a little bit differently. So you can kind of look at your scores and see, well, this one's low and this one wasn't quite as low, but it's weighted heavier. So maybe okay. I should do that one.
Okay.
You know, it's a little like that. And there's a big group on Twitter, people helping. There is a Colorado National Board Certified World Language Teacher group on Facebook that is really encouraging and using those tools is helpful.
Great. And maybe this has picked up a little bit in recent years as well, maybe with the downtime people had a little bit during the pandemic, and or just people seeking new ways to, like you said, reinvigorate their career and use more of their skills in doing something new. Do you think there's more of an interest recently?
That's a great question. I think it could go either way, because it stands to reason that people would think everything has been turned upside down anyway.
Sure.
Why not just dive into something new and see where this can take me? Uh-huh. Like, everything's been upturned, so let's kind of steer into the skid. But by the same token, I think there is a lot of absolute fatigue. And the thought of doing a process like this that is grueling might be a bit daunting until we have a little bit of an equilibrium again.
Sure. This is something people can pick up. Do you have to start it in August or September every year, or can you pick it up during the school?
First semester is when you register. And I think the registration deadline is usually like December 15th or somewhere in there.
Okay.
So I really recommend that people take a look at the components and study them and talk to people about them, because I think they're like component four is really involved. And I wish I had been studying the component a year before I ever started it, because that was my lowest score area. And I think it's because I didn't start early enough. So using the summer really to look at the components and study them and see what you could maybe do would be a great idea.
Let's talk a little bit about your grant. So we have something in common that we both were awarded a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities back in 2007. You went to Lyon, France, and I went to Avignon. So talk about just teachers, you know, especially world language teachers, a lot of times don't think about getting out there and applying to grants, and then you did this MEA education fellow. You know, I think, like you said, there's that imposter syndrome. When you were the MEA education fellow, you felt like everybody else has, you know, got all these credentials, right? How can we more just make it more of a common thing for teachers to put themselves out there, because there are these opportunities for them?
I think what's really key, and you are absolutely right, that the opportunities abound. Mm-hmm. What is key is meeting someone who has done one. Because once you've done one, it's like you're in this little network of other people doing the same thing.
Yeah.
What I realize is that it's a lot of the same people applying for the grants and the fellowships and getting them, mm-hmm. and encouraging each other. We need to branch out and encourage other people and let other people know that, hey, if there's something you want to do, there's a way to get it done for sure.
Yeah, there's so many ways of being able to travel this way as well, because you told me with the NEA fellowship, you actually went and visited schools in South Africa. This is not something you'd be able to do on a teacher's salary necessarily. And when we were both in France, you know, they put us up for a month. We went to plays for my, you know, it was about the theater in Avignon. You know, we got some of the money that covered for the play ticket, but you know, what are some opportunities that teachers would probably miss out on if they didn't apply to these types of grants?
Free travel is a big one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I, as a world language teacher, I am just a travel addict. I want to experience the whole world.
Yeah.
I just, wow. And it's important to me to figure out how to make that happen. So applying to things like the NEA Foundation Fellowship, applying to, like, you and I both applied for National Endowment for the Humanities grants. That program was a month long for me. Was it for you?
Yes.
Yeah, that was great. And it was in the summer. I was with French teachers from around the country. It was awesome. I was put up in a host family, so that was really good culturally. Fulbright has tons of different programs of different lengths. I just applied this spring to the Teachers for Global Classrooms Fulbright program. And that's a 2 to 3 week long program. Now, there are, of course, the Fulbright programs that everybody knows about, or a lot of people know about, the year-long teach abroad programs. And that's not really where I'm at right now in life with two small children, but a 2 to 3 week long program, I could do that. Or even things like the National Geographic Teacher Certification Program, that's free. And from what I've been told from colleagues who have done it, it's super high quality, really great for helping get kids global ready. And we just need to get out and learn about these programs and take advantage. I'm a big believer in just casting a wide net. I apply for everything and just kind of see what floats to the top. Yeah. Something will.
Yeah. And I think that's a great philosophy to have, because you're not going to get accepted to everything, but at least being out there and trying, you know, and then you'll see what comes along. And like you said, a lot of teachers have this excuse, like, oh, I have young kids, or, you know, I'm raising a family. And I think, you know, you have somebody who watches because you're married, or you have other family members. I think that now is the time when you're in the classroom and working with students, now is the time. Like, you're not going to have, when you're retired, you know, you'll be traveling for other reasons, but to get a grant, yeah, and to see how that can be, you know, what you learn during those travels can be applied in your classroom is definitely something don't hesitate, go out there and apply, I think. So it's kind of along the same lines of travel. So you're traveling with students coming up in early June. And you told me you've been doing...
We leave May 31st.
Okay, wow. Yeah, so pretty quickly. Whoa. And you've been doing trips since 2004. So how can you encourage teachers who are out there who are a little bit hesitant now post-pandemic? How can you encourage teachers to kind of get back into traveling with kids? And what are some of the things that you might be a little bit concerned about, but are saying, hey, you know, this is going to be a great trip this year?
Sure. So that second question I can answer pretty fast. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit concerned about what happens if someone gets COVID on the trip, because then they have to quarantine abroad and the travel company will fly a parent there to wait out quarantine with them. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of feel like, you know what, it may or may not happen and I don't have any control.
Yeah.
So let's just go forth and have the best time we can. Mm-hmm. As far as getting people traveling again, it depends who you are. If you have traveled before and you're nervous to do it again, then I think it takes someone who has done it to talk to you and just be like, hey, here was my experience. It's a lot like it has been in the past, or it's a little different, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. If you have never taken kids abroad, I think the best way to do it, and I did this at my school in Minnesota, there were a couple of Spanish teachers that were like, yeah, I'm kind of curious about this, but I'm scared to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, great. Let's do a trip together. Mm-hmm. I will lead it. You will be like leader number two, leader number three. And I hooked up my colleagues with a binder with tabs. Here's what you do first. Here's what you do for the informational meeting. Here's what you do once kids are applying. All the steps. I had everything lined out in binders for them. And we went abroad with kids. I had done it a lot. So I was like, I got this. You just follow along. And they were like, okay, this is how it's done. And then at least one of them went and did a couple different trips on her own with students. And that's what we need, you know, just teachers helping teachers.
And it seems like, you know, starting out with traveling with somebody who's experienced doing that is the right way to go. From my experience, it was trying to get kids to sign up for trips. Does your school have a lot of fundraising and other opportunities so the kids don't have to pay a lot out of pocket?
I do not do fundraising. It has been, my dad was a high school biology and anatomy teacher, and he took science related trips abroad. Mm-hmm. And he had, I think he had tried fundraising one time. He's like, oh my God, no. Because it's a lot of work to take kids abroad. And when you add fundraising on it, it's even more. So I have a document that I give families about all different ways students pay for the trip and some fundraising ideas for them to do.
Okay.
That I have come up with, but I don't run it myself. Mm-hmm. I also really like starting to get people interested at least a year, up to a year and a half, signed up before the trip happens, because then the monthly payments are lower. So that has been helpful. And the sweet spot for me is a group of 18. Mm-hmm. And I think you can do some really cool things equity-wise with a group that size, because for example, the company I'm traveling with on this particular trip provides one leader spot per six students. So the first six students, I get the leader spot. The next six students, another leader. But then those next six, you don't really need three leaders for 18 kids, you know? So what I recommend to teachers is use that third free spot to give a kid a full scholarship. Mm-hmm. And companies will do that, and it's easy to do. Or you can take that free spot and divide up the money to lessen the trip cost for everyone else. That's another way to do it.
Yeah, it seems like a great way to, you know, use those spots, like you said, especially if they're, you know, high schoolers that are, I would say, you know, 15, 16 plus, they're a little bit more responsible than taking a group of middle schoolers, right? So
yes,
you could try to, you know, have it, you know, you have an adult for every 9 kid, and then, yeah, you it's easier for kids to be able to come than having to fill up for dividing up scholarship opportunity. So yeah, wish you fun on the trip that you're going on. Is this just France, or are you doing France and Spain?
We are doing this time Paris and Madrid. Okay. And of the kids I'm taking, 12 of them are French students and 5 of them are Spanish students. Okay. And one of the Spanish students, he's an upper level Spanish student and just took French 1 this year because he knew he was going to Paris and he had space in his schedule. So that was pretty cool.
The kids get so much out of traveling, especially when they're doing it at a young age, and then, you know, they get the travel bug, and hopefully we'll do some study abroad in college, or, you know, yeah, any work opportunities that they have later in life. Well, we've had a great conversation today, you know, among other things, about National Endowment for the Humanities, National Board Certification, some of your writing, and how teachers can, you know, sell their own materials online. Out of everything we talked about, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
When you're thinking about global opportunities for kids, or really any opportunity for kids or for teachers, for yourself, never ask, either like rhetorically to yourself or actually ask to like an administrator or something, never ask if you can do something that's good for kids or good for your professional development. Mm-hmm. If you ask an if question, it's too easy to hear no in reply. Always ask how you can do what it is that you want to do, because there's a way every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's having that mindset of, you know, I'm going to go out there and do it. I might need a little bit of assistance along the way, but, you know, deciding you're going to do it, not if, or, you know, maybe someday in the future. And I think you know, definitely, you really represent like somebody who goes out there and seeks those opportunities. So if people want to learn more about you and connect with you on some of these topics we talked about, where can they find you online?
Well, I'm relatively new to Twitter, joined, I think, last year. So you can find me there at Erin, Erin-EH-Austin. Or you can also connect on LinkedIn. That's a great place too.
Great, great. And I'll put those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being my guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having
you. Thank you so much, Dana.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.